Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, if you're like me, you've likely received some suspicious emails. I bet you have. And on today's tech show, I'm going to start things off by talking about phishing scams. Back with us, Jesse LeGrew, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. So we'll talk about how to spot a fake email and what can happen if it sneaks by you. We'll also look at how you can protect yourself from them. And, of course, we'll take other tech-related questions as well. And I hope you'll join in. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Jesse LeGrew, welcome back. Good to have you with us today.
It's good to be here.
Maybe just start with some basics here and explain what phishing is. And, of course, phishing is spelled P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. Give us the details on it.
Yeah. So phishing, spelled with P-H, really kind of going back a long time when people talk about something maybe people really don't think about today, which is phone phreaking or something they used to use on the phone system, you know, the normal landlines that we probably use very rarely today. But it is using that system to try to scam someone. In a long time ago, it was really more for practical joking. But phishing today is really using emails to try to get information from individuals. It might be, you know, financial information. It might just understanding whether an email itself is valid. In some cases, it could be trying to install malware on your computer, so bad software through an attachment, through a link, or it could even be trying to get passwords. But usually it is trying to get an end user, whoever received that email, to take some kind of action. And that action is going to give the bad actor, the person sending that email, the organization sending that email, something in return. And a lot of times it's usually financially motivated.
Yeah, you know, I've gotten a few emails who are from, seemingly from people that I have on my, you know, friends and so forth. And sometimes it'll just be, here, take a look at this. And I never click on those. But it's been tempting a few times. You know, you're in a hurry and you're going through your emails and you see that. And I that's probably one way they do the phishing. Steal somebody's email.
Right. And that was one thing that was actually really, really common. It still happens today, definitely. But many times somebody would have, you know, some kind of malicious email. They might respond or click on it. Unknowingly, they might grant access for that other person on the other end to get access to their contacts. And so then they know who, you know, you are communicating with. And it makes it a little bit more troublesome for that other individual to know who it's coming from. It looks like, you know, somebody they've been corresponding with for quite some time. So they might be more inclined to actually click on that link or to reply to an email that otherwise they wouldn't. And, you know, the people creating these emails create very, very convincing emails. Many individuals, they're actually doing this for a living on a day-to-day basis, and they are continually improving how they're crafting these messages and making it much more difficult for an end user to see an email and know that it's completely legitimate or not. It makes it very, very challenging.
Yeah, in those circumstances, I'm pretty, you know, I felt, okay, this is somebody phishing. So what I've done is deleted, but then I've also sent an email to the person on the email address I know and say, hey, I think there's somebody's using your email.
Yep. And that's another dangerous thing to keep in mind, too, is, you know, sometimes, you know, if I get an email and I click on it and somebody really wants to get access to my account, let's say they're successful. They actually might be logging into my email account and using my actual email. So that can be really, really dangerous, too. So they might compromise somebody's account, use that account to send out these emails to other individuals. And if you do actually send email back to them saying, hey, this looks a little bit weird. It looks like you sent this to me. It actually might be received by that person the other end that was sending those bad emails. And it, sometimes it's really, really challenging to know. So one thing I always recommend, if you do get a message from somebody that looks a little unusual, you know, we see this with Facebook accounts and other social media accounts. I saw somebody who wanted to be my friend. I'm pretty sure I'm already friends with this individual. Yeah. If they have the same picture, well, it turns out it's somebody else. I might actually reach out to that person a different way. So it might be, you know, a phone call. It might be a text. If they email me, maybe I'll send them a Facebook message instead. But if you're able to find a different way to communicate with them, that might be helpful just to not inform potentially that bad actor on the other end that you're suspicious.
Yeah. So they use that information to get to your email accounts and then are your list. What else do they do? Or is that the main thing?
There's a lot of different tactics. I think one of the main things that they're looking for is really to collect data usually. They might try, for example, to install malware on a computer so they can try to steal all the computer that's on your device or maybe use it in some kind of ransomware so you have to pay money to get your information back. Two common things that I've seen is you go to a link, it asks you for a username and password, which might actually look very similar to what you use on a day-to-day basis, whether it's Google, Microsoft, or a different cloud account. It just turns out it's actually not Google or it's not Microsoft. It's a fake login portal. And so they'll capture your login information and then use that in a variety of different ways, whether it's to steal information from your cloud accounts or to use those accounts to send more phishing emails, which we see all the time. One thing I actually saw from an acquaintance recently was a UPS package. They actually had an alert. Hey, by the way, we had a UPS package. And it looks like it was, it's going to be redelivered. And please confirm here just to make sure that you yeah. know, change your information. In the end, what they were looking for, it looked like a valid web page, but you had to go through several pages down where in the end, they were asking for a credit card number so you could pay for this $2 charge. And really what they were looking for is a credit card number. So they wanted to take that information and, you know, use it for whatever they were going to do. To purchase whatever they wanted to purchase. So they were really trying to get that credit card information. In a way, they're trying to find any way to make money. It might be selling personal information. It might be using your account to do bad things so they can hide behind your account or getting you to give some information that otherwise they can use to make money in some other way.
How do you protect yourself from this mess?
It's a big challenge, and with whether it's email, whether it's text, which you know by the way, if you get a message like this via text, it's called smishing for SMS. So if you get a smishing message, it's very similar where you know they kind of give you a sense of urgency. Please do something now. Those can be one of the indicators. If you do receive a message that tries to kind of heighten your awareness of I really need to act now or something bad may happen, or maybe something bad is happening. Usually those are indicators that tell me to slow down and really be careful about reading the message. Because, you know, we all have those instances where we receive something and it feels like we need to act today or act even right now. Those are usually those crafted messages that can be a little bit more dangerous because we are more likely to click. We are more likely to reply. So I'm always on the lookout for those kind of alarm bells. The other aspect is, does the email address look right? Is this actually somebody I know? Was I anticipating this message? Do I know this person? If I receive an email from somebody I really don't know that's giving me some kind of urgent message, I'm gonna be really suspect because I was not anticipating this message and it should be something for me to be a little bit more careful about. The other thing is, you know, if you do receive it from somebody you know, do they communicate like the person you know? Yeah. So we all have people we talk with and, you know, maybe they speak in long sentences, lots of big words, no spelling errors. That's going to be very different than a message that's very brief with spelling errors or vice versa. Maybe you know somebody who really likes to text and speaks in very, very brief, short sentences. If you receive a message that's really, really long, it might be an indicator it actually isn't them. So Really knowing who you're communicating with can actually be really helpful because we all know better than anyone else who we're communicating with and what their communication styles are like. So if something seems a little bit off, it's a good indicator to kind of look a little bit deeper and think a little bit more critically about it. And if you do see something that seems too good to be true, it's very likely it is.
Jesse LeGru, our guest of Madison College's Technology Services Group. We've been talking with him a little bit about phishing emails, and we take your questions relating to that. Or if you have other tech questions, you're certainly welcome to join in with those as well. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Is there, should you report these emails? And if so, how do you report them?
Yeah, there's a couple of different reporting mechanisms depending on the email you're getting. So Gmail and a lot of other email services will usually have a spam or phishing email reporting button. So if you receive one of these messages, it does appear to be phishing. It's not something you would anticipate. Use those reporting mechanisms, and that will help your service provider understand, this might be a malicious message. For a lot of those services, they will also look for other emails being sent within their service. So you might actually help somebody else by reporting that message so you can give them, that additional information. So reporting it to your service provider is always a really, really good idea. And if you do happen to know anyone else on the other end, so if you received an email from somebody at a different institution or a different company, and it looks like it was their email, maybe their email address is compromised or their account is compromised. If you're able to contact that other end party, usually their IT staff, it might be their information security or cybersecurity staff. That's always a good idea too, just to make sure that account itself is safe. Because otherwise it might be, you might not be the only one receiving this message. There might be thousands of other people on the other end that are getting these messages from this one account. So if you're able to inform those organizations as well, that can be extremely helpful. Usually they're addressed relatively quickly, but the more you can get that information into the hands of individuals that can help to take direct action, the better.
Let's take a call. Tony in Wisconsin Dells, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I've gotten an email just the other day, and the address was from some sort of customer service at Amazon.com. So that made me feel like it was Amazon. And what it said was, we've just received an order for a laptop from Honduras, and then at the bottom of the email, it says, if this is fraudulent, please report it. It says, and then it had two little links. One would say, I'll deny, and the other one was accept. And I hit deny, saying, yeah, I didn't order a laptop, whatever. And then I thought, oh, geez, what did I just do?
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering if, it did say Amazon.com. It wasn't one of those crazy emails, that had a long, nonsensical whatever,
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's another good, it's a good point, too, in looking at links within emails. So one of the challenging things with Amazon is they don't just have an ordering service. They also have a complete infrastructure that people can use for a variety of reasons, whether it's legitimate or not. And sometimes Amazon, Microsoft, many other hosting providers are actually used for these campaigns. So it might actually be a real Amazon link, but may not be for the Amazon.com shopping. So normally when I do see an email, I'll hover over the link just to see what the link says. So what you did was great to get a better understanding of where that link might be going to. If I actually did receive a message from a third party, so let's say it's Amazon Prime, or I'm getting something from my Amazon account, I might actually go and type in directly to my Amazon account and navigate there myself rather than clicking on the link. Because usually you're going to get the same information directly from the Amazon site, and you're kind of bypassing that link. You're not quite sure about, so you don't know if it's dangerous or not. But if you go directly to the source yourself, that can also give you a little bit more security as well. And that's actually very common for a variety of services. So when you do get these emails, go directly to the website you're normally used to going to, and usually you can find the same information, and you can kind of bypass those links that might be a little bit dangerous.
So could Tony go back now and do that? And just to check and see if it was on there?
Yep, could definitely do that. And another thing you could do, if the link did appear a little bit suspicious, you actually might be able to report that directly to Amazon. So you can go directly to your Amazon account. You might be able to contact somebody from there and just note, hey, I got this link. I'm not sure if this is valid or not. And you might be able to get a response directly from Amazon. And if there is an issue on their end, they might be able to correct that too. But it's always good to, you know, go directly to the source, go to published information rather than the information that you see in your email. But if you hopefully still have that email somewhere, you can at least reference it and then cross-reference with you accessing your account directly, either through the app or through the web interface.
Tony, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Jesse LeGru, our guest today from Madison College's Technology Services Group. We've been dealing with phishing emails, but we'll take other tech questions as well as we move along here. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your emails and other software with our guest today, Jesse LeGru, Information Security Architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Callers, there's maybe an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. You know, you've talked many times about a good antivirus software, and somebody's wondering, how do you find a good one?
Yeah, that's a good question. There are a variety of different options out there. A lot of people that run Windows, it actually comes with antivirus built in. So I do recommend for any system that you have, whether it's Mac OS, Windows, Linux, you know, Google Chromebook, make sure you are able to keep your software updated. In many cases, that does include security software and any patches that could keep you from a little bit of danger. So I do like the products that come with Microsoft, built into Windows operating system. If you do have the latest version, their products come a long way. So that is a great option. There are also other options that you can pay for Windows, for Mac OS, and for other systems. There are also some free options out there. With security software, I tend to lean towards the paid products, usually because the free products, you're paying in some other way. It might be through ads, it might be through information, but usually when you're purchasing one of these products, you're usually getting a little bit more for it, either in terms of support or you're really offsetting costs that otherwise might be generated through ads or other services. Those would be my general recommendations. Both macOS and Windows have built-in security mechanisms that you can use. You can always pay for those products in addition. So use what's built in, but if you need, you know, a more premium product, take a look, because they might also offer a variety of other services like virtual private networking, which is great for privacy, or they might have other options like password managers. It's very common to see those bundled in. So you might find you have some other needs that you want. Not just for your home computer, but maybe for your phone or for another device. So I would definitely take a look because you might find some good deals out there.
You know, one of the things, and this has been in the past, I don't know if it's true today, that if you know, we already have something installed, and then if we add another one, say Norton, for example, that they sometimes don't like each other and kind of work against each other a little bit. Is that still the case?
I'd say it's definitely less common, but it is still something that can happen. So if you do have, you know, a version of Windows 10 or Windows 11 that has the built-in Windows Defender installed and running, and you install a third-party antivirus product, usually it's smart enough to either work with that product or it will disable Windows Defender. So it can be, it should be a little bit less common than it used to be, let's say 5 to 10 years ago. But it is recommended only have one enabled at any time. Because one thing that can happen, let's say if you do have two antivirus programs, let's say it found a bad file. So it quarantines the file so nothing bad can happen. Well, the other antivirus product finds the quarantine file from the other antivirus product, and they end up in this weird tug of war where they're fighting over quarantining this or deleting this bad file. And it can be a little bit unusual. So definitely only have one running. Usually, most of the time, you can disable another one that's built in. Like Defender comes with Windows. You really can't remove it. You can just only just turn it off. And most of the security products out there will actually be able to, they'll know that, and they will actually disable it for you. So it's actually reported within Windows. If you actually are using a product that can't properly do that within Windows, it would actually be an indicator for me, maybe I shouldn't be using this product because they're not very well developed. So it can be an issue, but it should be handled a little bit better today than it was quite some time ago.
Let's take another call. Diane in Green Bay, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I was wondering about my Hotmail. I get suspicious-looking emails that will say it's from Costco or whatever, and I can tell usually it has little blue or sometimes it has little blue or red things in the right in the line, email line. But anyway, I know I have a phishing option on my junk, so I just open the email, and then I scroll down to phishing and report it right away, and then it disappears. Is that a good way to do it, or should I be checking that email before I even open it and dumping it?
And that's a great question. If you have a pretty good feeling that by looking at the email, it does not appear legitimate and you're not missing out on anything if you report it, I would actually just report it without opening it. Sometimes just opening an email can be dangerous enough because it might load content in the background that could be dangerous. So if you're relatively certain it is not something you want, I would honestly report it. Usually the services like Hotmail, any of the Microsoft 365 services, Gmail, they will have a variety of services in the background that will check the validity of those messages based on what you're sending them. And if they're not dangerous, it will not, you know, clear those out from other inboxes. If you're not quite sure, if you actually feel it is legitimate, you know, it might serve you. At some point, you have to kind of make that decision. Do I look at it or do I not look at it? If you have a pretty good indicator that it looks legitimate and it is an email you're likely expecting or wouldn't be surprised about, I would take a look at it. And if you're able to take a look at it without some of the what they call like rich content or dynamic content enabled, such as pictures in the background loading. If you have those things disabled, that can also be a nice safety mechanism just because it might load content that could be bad. So really, you know, you can only use your best judgment to take a look at it. Once you do open the email, you know, take a look at the, you know, the sender, who it's from, what their email address is, the content of the message. You always have the chance to report it after you open it up. But if you do feel it's likely junk, you weren't anticipating it, I normally will send it to junk or to phishing, and I will not think twice. If it is legitimate, usually they're going to find another way to contact you anyway. So in many cases, it's not really something you're missing. You're going to be reached out to in a different way anyway.
And, you know, relating to this, Sue had emailed. She's constantly getting McAfee spam. She moves it to spam. And it just replaces itself with another one almost right away. How can you eliminate it? Because evidently just moving it to spam doesn't work.
Yeah, there are a couple ways to do it. So if I was continually getting an email from, you know, somebody and it just wasn't quite sticking in my spam folder, I would probably look at the email sender. You know, who is it coming from? Is it still coming from, let's say, McAfee.com? Or is it coming from a completely different email address? It is very possible that maybe it's coming from a different email address than McAfee, or it's generated brand new every single time. If that's the case, there might be another issue there. And you might actually want to report it as phishing, which might have different analysis on the back end. Because if it is, you know, you kind of have two different situations. One, it's a valid McAfee email, and they're just sending you a lot of them. Or two, it's an invalid McAfee email, and they're trying to trick you to click on a link. And both of those are very, very different. One thing I will do, if I do get emails I just don't want, I will actually just block them. And normally you can right-click on a message, block sender. Usually that'll take it to spam, junk, or even just delete it completely. And that will you get it away from your inbox from any other message you're going to receive in the future. One item I'd recommend, if you know it's a valid McAfee email, which can be tricky sometimes, they will have usually an unsubscribe button on the bottom where you can unsubscribe. The dangerous thing is sometimes those unsubscribe buttons are used for bad emails so they can register you have a valid email account, which means they're going to send you more stuff. So it's tricky to know if it's valid or not. I would actually take a look at the email address. If you do receive new emails and it's from the same address, somehow that junk mail filter or that block filter is not quite working. And so I would give it another try, and you can probably go through your filter settings to try it. But take a look at the sender and block it if possible.
We have, you know, you mentioned Facebook a little earlier in passing, and many people have had their Facebook profiles duplicated. And I've had this happen where somebody wants to be a Facebook friend, and I know darn well they're already a Facebook friend. But what should you do if you get a friend request from somebody who's already your friend?
Yeah, and I've got this quite a bit myself too. So if you do get it, one of the things I do first is if I have another way to contact the person who I know is real. So if I have a friend on Facebook and I have their cell phone number or their email address, I will send them a message in a different way. Say, hey, by the way, you sent me a friend request. Is this actually you or not? I do have people who just seem to create new Facebook accounts about every year for whatever reason. And sometimes it's valid. Most of the time it's not. So first is check whether it's good or not. And then second, decline the request. You want to make sure that they don't necessarily have access to your information. And so I would also double check your own privacy settings, because sometimes you are granted access to another individual's profile just by requesting that friendship connection. And at least this was the case, you know, a while ago, and it might still be the case today. So being able to decline that request is also a good idea to make sure they don't have any information about you. Another thing I look for is if they're trying to send me a friend request, they might be trying to send friend requests to their other friends in that network. And on Facebook, at least, you can see mutual friends. That can also be an indicator maybe some people took the bait and they shouldn't have. And so you might actually want to reach out to those other individuals too. Hey, by the way, I talked to so-and-so. It turns out this is a fake profile. You probably want to unfriend this individual. And I would also report that fake account to Facebook or to whatever other service it might be, Twitter, Facebook, then at least they can remove it on their end. But there's a lot of things that they can get access to, and it can be really, really tricky because you don't just have to validate that account. You also have to think about what might that account have access to on your profile that you might be concerned about. Many times that might be a personal email address. It could be a birth date, or it could be other information. So I would also be careful about the information you're sharing with your network, either with immediate friends or what they have as friends of friends, because it can kind of lower the barrier for people trying to get that information, which is usually what they're trying to do. They're just trying to collect data. They might be trying to communicate with you directly, but in many cases, they might just be trying to collect information from your account so they can use it for other reasons.
Jesse LeGru, our guest from Madison College's Technology Services Group. Question for him. We've been talking a lot about phishing emails. We've been talking a little about Facebook and a little about antivirus software. You have questions in those areas or other tech questions. Are you having some problems with your computer? Hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address, ideas@WPR.org. Ideas@WPR.org. What kinds of other tech questions are you getting these days, Jesse, that have been popping up?
Well, I think even with the phishing emails is, you know, what do I do when I click on something? Because I think I know I've been there. I can't say if everyone has, but I've clicked on an email here and there and, you know, really look back and I shouldn't have clicked on that. That was actually a bad link. Something bad might happen or there might be an attachment. So what happens if you get your computer compromised or what happens if somebody gets your password? And, you know, when those things happen, and they do happen, I think many people have been there. First thing I like to do is just make sure to scan my computer with an antivirus program. If you don't have one installed, I highly recommend installing one. There's just malware all over the place being delivered in a variety of ways. So it's at least lowers a little bit of the risk from getting your device infected. So, you know, keeping that clean is important, but also with accounts, it can be tricky with having probably, you know, tens and maybe even hundreds of accounts out there online. Trying to use unique passwords is really important, but also extremely complicated because of the fact we have tons of online accounts out there. So I do highly recommend using a password manager to keep track of it. And also when you can enable multi-factor authentication. So if somebody does get your password, at least it should lower the chance they're going to be able to get in your account since you have that additional factor. So that account protection is important. And even more important, just due to the sheer number of accounts we've had. And I think over the last few years, the usage of a lot of different cloud providers has really increased. And so it can be even riskier, you know, if you use the same username and password. Because if they get one, they might get them all. So password reuse can be really, really challenging. Because I can only remember so many things, and that's the challenge. How do I have 100 accounts and remember 100 different unique passwords? I cannot do that.
No.
So having a password manager to do it is a great way to do it, rather than having 100 accounts in the same password. Because if one of them gets breached, all of them are open for somebody to log into and do something bad with.
Let's go to Rowley in Oak Creek next. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, those phishing emails again. I was shopping for a new car online, and like a dummy, I gave up my email. And now I get all these phishing emails, and on the bottom of these phishing emails are the, a link that says unsubscribe. Well, it doesn't unsubscribe you. It instead takes you to more junk. I wonder any way to stop this kind of. It seems like a circle I can't get out of.
Yeah, the only things I can really recommend are a couple things. One, if you do have a spam, phishing, or junk filter, or even a block filter, I would probably recommend using those. So even if you can't unsubscribe from whatever emails you're getting, the more you report them, generally it will eventually reduce those emails in your inbox, unless they're creating really, really unique emails and using a lot of different unique email addresses. So those would be my immediate recommendation to try to clean up your inbox. It does kind of take time, but eventually your email system will kind of learn these are good, these are bad. And hopefully over time, you won't see those anymore. Another option, which is also really challenging, have a personal email address that you use for, you know, normal correspondence with friends, family, and whoever else you might need. Have another email account that you might use for signing up for services or if you need to do something else with. That way, if you are getting spam, you're getting spam on that account that you only use for certain transactions, and you're not getting it into your personal account, which can give you a nice divide between, I know these emails are probably good, and most of the emails in this account are generally things I don't need to look at anyway. And that can be really a great thing to do when signing up for any service, or, you know, if you go to any kind of show you, they might want to ask for, you know, a raffle and ask for an email address or a phone number. Having those accounts that don't really tie back to your main phone number or your main email address is really good, because it does protect your identity information, but it keeps that inbox clean.
And how do you go about, somebody's wondering here, how do I block, or what's the procedure I have to go through to find these things that you're talking about?
Yeah, and if you are looking for, and this will depend on whether you're using, what kind of email service you're using. So normally for most web-based email services, when you right-click on an email message, you will get an option to send it to junk, to block it, or to mark it as spam. Sometimes you might actually have to open the message itself, and they'll have a little drop-down menu where you can report spam, phishing, or block the email address altogether. Most of them will use the same terminology. So they'll have block, they'll have report spam, and they'll have report phishing. Spam and phishing are two different things, because spam is just, it's kind of legitimate email, but it's not malicious. It's not trying to do something bad to you. It's just kind of annoying. It's just filling up your inbox. It's the mail you really didn't want to see and you never read. That's spam. The phishing is something actively bad is happening here. They're trying to have you click on a link or download a bad email. And so I do try to differentiate between the two when I report it, because they do potentially do different things in the back end. If you just don't want to see the emails anymore, the block option can also be really good. So hopefully it will filter out those senders over time. But if you do submit some of those items as junk, even if it's from different senders, it might be able to flag on, I see these items in the subject line or these items in the body of the email message. And by submitting it as junk, it gives your email provider different filters to potentially filter that out from your inbox in the future. That may or may not be the same as just blocking it. So you have a lot of different options.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you just don't want to see it in your inbox, hit block. But I do like to hit reporting as spam or phishing, just because, kind of like the collective good, it does help others if I'm able to do the same thing, because it gives the provider something, and then they can take that information and protect others that are using the same email infrastructure.
Let's go to Barbara in Grand Marsh. Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
Yeah, what can we do for you?
Well, I am 83 years old, and I'm very proud of what I can do. I have a tablet, and I have been getting these emails that aren't even addressed to me. It might be something from Home Depot, and it's to somebody that isn't me. So I've just been deleting them. But it's like every day. I don't know anything about phishing. I don't know anything about blocking on my tablet. What do I do?
Okay, the tablet. So you can't right-click on your tablet, or can you?
You can. It depends on kind of the tablet you're using. Are you using, do you know if you're using an Android tablet, an iPad? Do you happen to know?
Well, I guess it's an iPad.
Okay. With the iPad, you have a few different options. You can use kind of the built-in mail application, which is what most people use. They'll usually use the built-in option right out of the box. One thing you can do with a variety of tablets, anything that's kind of touchscreen, really, if you push and then do not release your finger right away, it will usually either open up kind of a separate tab, or it'll give you options on what you can do with that message. And those might be, you know, sending it to trash, it might be submitting it as junk, or a variety of other things. So that's one way you might be able to bring up a menu, so you can kind of take some other action. Otherwise, if you are using the mail app, if you do click on one of the messages, normally you'll get a large screen, and near the lower right, you will have an option to, it's normally a little arrow and it's kind of pointing to the left and a little bit curved. If you click on that, you'll have an option to move to junk, delete it. Usually you're not going to be flagging it because it's not an email you care about. But that might allow you to not receive that in the future. Otherwise, you can just click on the trash button on the top. It can be a little bit different. It may not be flagging it exactly the way you want it to block it from coming into your inbox, which can be a little bit challenging. If you have a different option outside of those, so for example, if you're using like an Apple email service, you might have other options that you can use, but that lower right option with that little arrow curving to the left, if there's any place on your iPad to be able to report it, it's likely going to be there. So click on the email, click on that little arrow in the lower right, and it will give you a menu of options. It might just be to move it to trash, but hopefully that'll kind of work in the future. The only other way I can think of doing it, most of the email services we have, you can also access from a website. In many cases, the website will have many more options than the built-in client we might have on a tablet. So if you don't see the real option you want, whether it's to block or to report it as phishing or spam, you actually might need to go to the web interface just because the option is only available there. Otherwise, the only thing you can really do is delete it. But if you go to the web interface, you might see you have other options. So it depends on the email that you're kind of getting and what service you're using. If you are using, for example, a Microsoft email service on an iPad, I'd actually recommend installing the Outlook app because you will have more options using that. So if you do have different email services, a lot of times you'll have a built-in client you can download from the App Store, or if you have an Android from Google Play, those clients will have more options than the built-in client for the iPad if you're not using like Apple email services. So that could give you an additional benefit if you don't want to go to the website too.
Barbara, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jesse LeGrew, our guest today. I'm Larry Mehler. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network, taking a look at tech issues. We've talked a lot about phishing, a bit about Facebook, but we'll take your other tech questions as well at 1-800-642-1234. Or email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Jerry in Waukesha next. Hi, Jerry. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. My question is, recently Windows upgraded from Windows 10 to Windows 11, and that's in the future going to make it impossible for a lot of people to run Windows 11 on their existing PCs. And in order to fit the new operating system, they're going to have to pay anywhere from $500 to $1,000 per machine to run Windows 11. Is it worth it, really?
It's a great question. It all depends on a variety of different factors. So Windows 10 is supported until about 2025. So that means you're going to have options for software upgrades, security updates, all those good things. One thing I always want to make sure an end user has is a supported operating system. Because if you don't have support, it's likely you're not going to be able to get patches. You might not even be able to get software because it may not be developed and released for that operating system anymore. So, you know, should you upgrade to Windows 11? Well, you don't necessarily need to until 2025 if you're running Windows 10. There might be some other options if you do want to run Windows 11. But I can't think of any requirements at the moment where you actually need to run Windows 11. Usually, it can be more challenging actually to have a newer operating system than an older one.
Yeah.
Or at least in the sweet spot. So you don't want to have an operating system that's not getting updated or supported. But if you have the latest and greatest, some things actually might just not work. And this was, you know, really common when you had a very new operating system. Some older software packages just would not work for it anymore. I have at least my home computer running Windows 11. The upgrade seemed to go relatively seamlessly. I didn't have many issues. So I feel like I was pretty lucky. It's been very different in the past when I've upgraded and just half the things don't work. But if you don't need to upgrade, don't necessarily do it. I mean, it is going to look a little different. It's going to act a little different. At some point, it will not be supported, and then you're going to have a different problem. But at that point, you might be ready to replace your computer anyway.
Yeah.
Usually, a computer can last, let's say, 3 to 5 years. In some cases, it can last quite a bit longer. the biggest thing is, can you install supported software on it? So if you don't want to spend the money, you can wait about 3 years until you're ready to refresh that computer and then upgrade at that point. So there's no need to upgrade to Windows 11. Many individuals are getting a free upgrade if they have Windows 10 and it was released at a certain point. But if you do have constraints for, the RAM or memory on your computer, or maybe the hard drive disk space, those might be challenges. If you do really run into disk space issues just for an upgrade, it's likely you're probably going to have a disk space issue in the short term anyway. You're likely going to run out of storage space, and there are upgrade options available in those cases. Some can actually be really inexpensive, or getting external hard drives to kind of offload some of that storage can also be really, really useful. But yeah, you don't need to upgrade. You can wait it out until you're ready to refresh your PC. I just recommend, if you're going to wait, make sure to upgrade by 2025 in October, so you can make sure to get those updates. Luckily, we've got a little over 3 years, so there's time to find a way to get those computers replaced anyway.
There you go, Jerry. Thanks for calling. Cindy in Green Bay, hello.
Hello. I have a question about emails. I have three different email accounts, and I have them all linked together to come into my Outlook, Microsoft Outlook. But I access them sometimes on my phone, sometimes on my laptop, and sometimes on my iPad, which means what I delete on my desktop, or my laptop, I should say, doesn't always delete in the other areas. So if I go into my phone, I still have the same emails. I still have to delete the same emails. Is there any way to get around this?
That is a good question. Do you know what providers you have for your email accounts?
Well, Yahoo, Gmail, and Outlook.
Okay. At least for Gmail and Outlook, I haven't used a Yahoo account in a while. Most of them are set up in a way where once you do it on one device, it'll happen on all of them. So I actually do the same thing. I have an Android phone. I have a iPad tablet, but I also have a normal, Windows computer. So I have multiple devices using it, and sometimes I'll use the web. When I delete from one, it deletes from all. Sometimes if it's using like an older interface or it's using an older protocol, it may not do that. So if you have set up your email account, for example, on one of your devices, and it's been several years, one of the things I'd recommend is remove the email account from your device and set it up from scratch. And there's a couple different reasons to do this. When we all upgrade devices, sometimes the settings just kind of transfer from device to device to device, but they might actually have settings that are either insecure or actually not allowing us to take full advantage of all the features. So one of the recommendations I would have is remove one of the accounts from all of your devices and set them up from scratch, and then see if the behavior is different. Because I do know for my Microsoft and my Google accounts, that does work between multiple devices and using different operating systems. And I can also note that works for an iPad if you're using the Mail app. It also works if you're using the Outlook app. So you might also want to use the native applications that might be available from those providers. So whether it's from Gmail, Outlook, or Microsoft, or Yahoo. Granted, I use a Mail app, and I use basically every single application. They're different, and they seem to work fine. So it just makes me think maybe one of your devices is using an old protocol that's not actually accessing that live email online and updating accordingly. It's kind of downloading a copy of it, which you're deleting manually, and that's why they're all a little bit out of sync, and you kind of get that different behavior. So set up the email client from scratch and kind of go from there, because I would actually be really surprised, because I can't speak for Yahoo, but I'd be really surprised if Yahoo wasn't syncing in the same way. So you should really get that behavior, and it may be a setting actually of the email account setup, and setting it up from scratch with updated software will likely resolve that issue.
And you can set that up and not lose all your emails if you're starting over?
Yes. And one thing I'd recommend, if before doing that, if you want to make sure you don't, you have all your email, log into the web interface, you know, go to yahoo.com, go to microsoft.com, go to gmail.com, log into those accounts and see if all of your email is in the web interface. Because really that's the reference that all of your devices should have for your email. If you see that all of your email is there, which hopefully it should be, if all of your email is there, when you delete your accounts, you will not be deleting any data. So look there and then set it up.
Cindy, good luck. Appreciate your call. Our guest today, Jesse LeGrew, he's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. He's the information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Dan and Baraboo, we'll get to you after we take a look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the AS Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Taking a look at technology today on the program. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jesse LeGrew, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. So, what questions do you have about tech? Love to hear from you at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@WPR.org. And let's take a call. Dan and Baraboo, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good afternoon. Good morning. Two times in the last 6 weeks, my computer has keyboard and screen locked up with a message that said, call this number if you want to release your computer, or it's going to be locked up like this forever. My response to that each time has been to simply turn off the computer at the main power button on the desktop unit. This happened to one of the two times was my granddaughter using the computer to look for a coloring sheet. So it's not like very odd websites. I mean, my Avast free antivirus obviously is not working. So my two questions are, number one, is there something better that I should be purchasing or getting free online to be a device, or should I be using the $2 a month or $3 a month upgrades from Avast to prevent these sorts of lockups from happening? Also, is turning off the computer a good enough solution to when that does?
You're kind of breaking up there, so I think we have it. Jesse, what do you think? Should Dan try something different here? I'm wondering what he has on his computer to begin with.
Originally I was thinking it might be some kind of ransomware, but it doesn't actually appear to be encrypting anything because the device boots back up normally. So it's likely some kind of scare tactic or scam to try to get you to call in and pay the money for something you really don't need. What I'd probably recommend doing is if you do, have a location where you can actually have somebody do a checkup on the device, and there's a variety of retailers out there that will do this. You do have something on your device that needs to be cleaned up. Even if you do install antivirus now, that might be able to detect it. It may not be able to clean it up sufficiently. So I would recommend bringing it in somewhere just for them to have a look at it, potentially to back up all of your data just to make sure you don't lose anything. Because if it is some kind of ransomware infection and you are lucky enough where things are not encrypted today, at least you can back things up and get things restored to a point where you can start using the device without issues. In terms of kind of what to do about antivirus, if you do bring it into a third party, they also might have some recommendations for you, either products that they offer at the location or potentially a different service that they offer. So that would be another recommendation for input. If you are running Windows 10 or 11, they do have built-in Windows Defender. It has improved quite a bit. So I would actually recommend using the built-in antivirus that is included with Windows if you're not doing it today, just because it's actually currently included and it is free. But if you are using an older version of Windows, Windows 8 might also have it, maybe less full-featured. So the newer version of Windows tend to be a little bit better with Windows Defender. Otherwise, I would recommend to actually purchase a third party. Considering your experience with Avast, I may not recommend continuing to use their product and pay for an additional service just because I'm not sure kind of what it was missing at that point. It also might just be, you know, adware that it might not actually be a real virus. It might just be something kind of annoying that's trying to scam you out of money. Malwarebytes is another good application, and I believe it's still free for just standard end users. So for personal use, Malwarebytes can be a great option. They do have a paid option, but it's not necessarily at least a traditional antivirus product that we think about when we think about with Defender or Norton antivirus. Otherwise, there's a variety of other third-party products that you can purchase out there that are really good that might also be good options for other products like password managers or virtual private networks. But first, I really would just have your computer checked out by somebody who kind of knows what they're doing so they can just make sure that your computer is clean. Also ask them for recommendations to see if they have something in the store. In many cases, you might actually get a discount just because you had the checkup. So yeah. You might be able to get a checkup and a discount, which might serve you really, really well. Otherwise, there's a variety of other options that you can pay for online. And that's kind of the risk with a lot of free software. Sometimes, you know, you kind of get what you pay for. So sometimes just a little bit of investment will actually give you a better product. But if you are using Windows 10 or 11, use the built-in Defender and see how it works. It really has improved. And Microsoft's taking a lot of great information from devices all around the world to better protect really any device that has their Defender product installed. So I think it's really good if you do have a newer version of Windows.
Good luck, Dan. Thank you. Jeff in Elkhorn, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, hi. We use Office 2016 in our office, and I'm fond of the Outlook desktop version. About a week ago, I started getting messages that said Outlook would not start unless we did some kind of an update on it, and did the update, and then Outlook stopped working altogether. So, and now it's caught into, it says you need an update, but there is no update, and it doesn't work. And I've tried some different services to help me through that, and I was told that Microsoft is eliminating the desktop versions. They really want everybody to go to the online versions. So I don't know if that's the case. It didn't affect any of the other suite programs within it, just Outlook itself. Not sure if there's anything we can do about that.
Yeah, it's a good question. If you do have, so if it is an issue with the installation of Outlook, and if it's not a setting, one thing I might recommend is you can uninstall Office and reinstall it just to see if then you can update and hopefully everything works again. Since you are running Outlook 2016, there are usually a couple different things that can kind of cause an issue with Outlook. One is the software application itself. Another is actually the Outlook settings that you have for a particular user, which includes, you know, the email that they have in their inbox. And all the settings that come with that account. You might be able to go to your control panel and go to your mail settings and actually set up a brand new profile. And once it prompts to use that new profile, you can see if the behavior is different. And that's one thing I'd check out if you didn't want to just uninstall the application and reinstall it from scratch. But you might need to actually uninstall, reinstall, fully update, and then kind of go from there. I was trying to look to see some additional information about that particular error, because normally you're not going to get a message where it can't start until you update. I was actually wondering if it might have been some kind of malware or some fake message. It may or may not be. I can't be sure. But if you do uninstall and reinstall, that might resolve the issue. Otherwise, kind of as you noted, they are pushing a lot of individuals and organizations to Microsoft 365, which is the kind of the latest and greatest of their Office product. That also is not just online, but you can install a client on your device. So Word, Excel, Outlook, everything else. It's just they kind of went away with how the versions work and how the naming works. Microsoft does that a lot. It makes it extremely confusing sometimes. But yeah, I would try the new profile, see if it changes. If you do have a different user account on that computer, log in with a different user account, see if it changes. Really just trying to determine, is it the software? Is it the user? Is it the profile? Just to see how much work you need to do. Granted, if reinstalling Office fixes the issue, that actually might be a faster solution than doing all the troubleshooting I was talking about. So reinstalling Office might be another good option, and then do the latest update. One thing with Outlook or Office in general, many cases they'll have service packs which contain a variety of updates throughout many years. You might be able to download that service pack offline and kind of reinstall the service pack, which might help to repair some versions with Office. There usually is a repair feature within the Office install as well. But that's kind of what I'd recommend. Hopefully the reinstallation is going to fix it. But if you do want to find out why it's happening, I would recommend doing some of those troubleshooting steps. But, you know, it does take a little bit of time. You may not care why it's happening, only that it's fixed. And if that's the case, you know, back up any Outlook profiles if you have them. Just go ahead and uninstall Office, make sure it's clean, reinstall Office with all the updates, and then kind of go from there. If you do have, you know, Windows Update installed or enabled on your device, they will have the option enable third-party Microsoft updates, which includes Office. So make sure you have that enabled, and then perform all the updates after installation. And hopefully after that, everything will be good. If not, it could also be a third-party third-party application or plugin, which can happen with Outlook and a variety of other other files. And there is a safe mode option you can run in Office, which you should also be able to get from the control panel and the mail option. But it sounds like you're kind of stuck. You can't open it anyway. So reinstalling might just be the easiest way to go about it after you back up those profiles.
Jeff, good luck. Thank you. Dolores in Fond du Lac, your turn. Hi, Dolores.
Hello. Hello. I have Amazon Fire tablet, an iSIM telephone, and an iMac computer. Now, my computer is about, I think, 8 years old. How old should a computer be before it falls? Does it quit? What happens to them? How do I know when I need a different machine of sorts? Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm in the last 20 years of my life.
Okay.
The biggest indicator for, at least for, you know, your main computer to determine, is it too old? If it's working for you, it's working for you. So there's no need to upgrade if things are working fine for you. If you're on an iMac, they have a little Apple menu on the upper left-hand corner, and usually you can go to Apple Updates. And those software updates will usually get released pretty regularly, but maybe, you know, like around once a month. If you're not able to get those updates, or it tells you that your software is not supported, that at least might be an option to upgrade your software. With Apple hardware, they only support the latest 3 hardware versions, I believe, which is kind of tricky to know, you know, is it supported or not? In your case, honestly, I'd ask an Apple store, because they're going to be able to tell you really quickly, tell me the information here, it is or is not supported. And they might give you a recommendation for a different computer. But if you're continuing to get updates, if your applications can continue to be functioning fine, there's no necessary need to upgrade. You can continue to use a computer for quite some time as long as you're able to get those updates. The challenge is when you start using software or you try to install something and it tells you, hey, this is not supported because your computer's too old. Usually that's a time where, okay, you really don't have any options and you have to go ahead and purchase a new device and maybe migrate all your data to it. So usually those are the indicators I'd be looking for. When your computer tells you it's too old. And it will actually tell you when you try to install software, I can't do this because your computer's too old and you need to upgrade to new hardware. Otherwise, for the device, call Apple. They also have the Apple stores, which are extremely helpful, and they can very much help you to determine kind of where your computer is in the life cycle and whether it's still supported. And if it's still supported, keep using it. If it's not supported, consider getting a new one.
Yeah. Yep. There you go, Dolores. Thank you for calling. Jerry in Hudson, your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. Or afternoon. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
See alerts coming through. I have a Samsung phone.
Okay.
And I am seeing the alerts coming through that Chrome has been hacked again. And on my phone, everything is Google-based, photos, et cetera. And I'm concerned about the vulnerability to this Chrome. I guess it's a platform. I'm not a techie. I don't know if I have the right terms. So I do whatever they say on the news or whatever to go in and check for that. But is there something I should be doing to protect myself better? I do have, I believe, Norton on my phone. But I am concerned about this. These repeated Chrome notices coming out that they've been, I guess for a better word, hacked.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a good question. The downside is with any software we have out there, they're going to have vulnerabilities, and Chrome is very popular and a lot of people use it. And it's actually pretty much a regular occurrence, and Google's not alone. The best recommendation I have is I think you're doing a great thing by just, listening and seeing those things as they come up. So, continue to stay informed. And as these new things come out, they don't stop. I do this for a living, and you just get bombarded every single day. It is never going to end. I would make sure, at least on your phone, that you have automatic updates enabled. So for an Android device, when you go to the Play Store, you do have options to take a look at your apps, and you also have options to enable automatic updates. You can also do this in settings on your device, but I would just make sure that under your managed apps and devices, you enable automatic updates when you can. And if you do want to check manually, so let's say a new vulnerability came out today, take a look. And if you need to, without even waiting, you can see if there's updates and just hit the update button. So if you don't want to wait till it's automatically updating, you can go there and do it ahead of time to make sure that your device is safe. Automatic updates is probably the biggest recommendation I can have for any device. If you don't have the automatic updates available, it probably means that you may not have a supported device, which then it kind of goes into the device replacement territory. Doesn't sound like that's the case for you. Just keep listening, keep updating as you can. And if you're ever concerned because there isn't a patch available and something might sound dangerous, having a separate browser that is not Chrome could also be a good option. So go to your Play Store, Firefox, and Chrome, and there's a variety of other options out there that you can use if for whatever reason you don't feel things are as secure because you're waiting for a patch to be released. Having options is always a good thing, especially if something breaks, and there's tons of options on the Play Store. Just make sure when you're looking at any of those apps, you're getting valid apps, because they do usually a relatively good job about bad apps that are out there, but it does happen from time to time. Just keep your stuff updated. I think even the recent ones that came out is that they're released relatively quickly. So I think for a lot of the different vulnerabilities, they've been even released the same day. So just hit the update button. That's the best recommendation I can have. Outside of having another option if you don't want to use that browser at the time.
Good luck, Jerry. Thank you. Chloe in Clinton, your turn. Hi, Chloe.
Yes, I've been using Microsoft Edge as my browser for some time, but suddenly a couple weeks ago it started coming up in Polish. And I have uninstalled it, reinstalled it. I've verified that English is the default language, but it's still in Polish. I don't know what else I can do.
Hmm. That's strange.
That's an interesting question. So a lot of times, especially with Edge or other browsers, they actually might be reading the information from your device. So if your device thinks it's in Poland, your browser might end up in Polish. So another thing I would actually go ahead and take a look at, go to your date, time, and location settings under the control panel just to see, is it showing in the proper location? If it is showing the proper location there, at least, you know, you checked one box off. That's the only immediate thing I can think of. I'm trying to think of a different language setting that it might have, but it can come directly from that window setting for locations.
Probably that's where it is, Chloe. Good luck. Give it a look and see what's up. Lance emailed. He can't get his desktop computer to go to sleep or turn off the displays after inactivities. The screens go to dark after a few minutes, but lights up again immediately. The drive never goes to sleep unless he presses the power button.
Yeah, the only thing, what's interesting is I actually have this issue, although it's specific to the display I have. So there's a few recommendations I have. Make sure you have the latest up-to-date video drivers, because that could be an issue. It could be an external display if you have it plugged in. Otherwise, I would just validate your power settings, just because it will really indicate when it may or may not go to sleep and how it wakes up. But I have seen that with specific displays, if you have an external one, it might actually be that external display. If you unplug that external display and then give it, it might actually go to sleep fine. So any peripheral you have plugged in could be causing an issue with it actually properly going to sleep, because it sounds like it's trying, but for whatever reason, it's just not getting there. So I think something else is waking it up, and it's probably a different device that you have plugged in. So, you know, double check your device or your control panel power settings. But my guess is that something you have plugged in your laptop is trying to wake it up as soon as it's trying to go to sleep.
And on that happy note, we have to go to sleep with this program. Jesse, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll look forward to your next visit in a couple of months. Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you.
Jesse LeGru is an information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Great to have him with us. Yeah, lots of good answers for you today. Well, let's look ahead to tomorrow. We'll talk about Healthcare Decisions Day tomorrow at 11. Then at 11:45, we'll find out about the latest research on Lyme disease and blastomycosis. We've had lots of questions about that, so that's why we've decided to put that in as a program. That's tomorrow starting at 11 on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, I hope you'll stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.